my goodness, it's a big show today. It's a big show today. I sound like Sean Hannity on a very busy news night. There's so much to talk about. I'm in a fantastic mood. We're recording this on a Monday. Normally we go on Sundays. Mm-hmm. However, I'm digging the Monday thing in a weird way. Although I'm insanely behind the eight ball, there's a ton to talk about. We've got a great show. Gypsy, you just had an inspired idea. That new movie, Gosnell, mm-hmm. about that butcher abortion doctor who was just killing people left and right. I need to see the movie. That's coming out this week. And we had some technical difficulties yesterday. And so what we're going to do is we're going to let you guys hear our interview with Nick Searcy. He's an actor. He's the director of the film. You've seen him in a ton of stuff. So that'll be a blast. Now, here's what happened. We had Michael J. Knowles all lined up. He's from the Daily Wire. And Skype just took a big, giant dump on us yesterday. It was bizarre. Not a good day for technology in the Loftus Party camp.
Nope.
So this week, here's what's going to happen. This weekend, I'm headed to Politicon, and I'm going to be hanging out with Ann Coulter and Tucker Carlson and Sally Cohn and all the big wheelers and dealers in political punditry. So I'm going to get a bunch of interviews with those guys, and then we're going to use that later down the road. Then we're going to reschedule my good buddy Michael Knowles. I'm going to be at the Improvisation on Melrose tomorrow night. There's another, I forget her name. She's another on-air personality over at Daily Wire. We're going to be talking to her. It's and then we've got Rob Long, my old buddy from the Kevin James show. We're going to be having him on. It's the get there. We're lining them up. We're lining them up like planes at LAX.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. So there's a ton of stuff going on in the news. This is kind of exciting for me. I did a show last night at this club because I've been writing, you know, and I was in New York and I was doing stand-up in New York. So I feel like I'm kind of being reintroduced to the L.A. comedy scene.
Mm-hmm.
I did a show at this club called Levity Live. It's in this community, Oxnard, California, where my dad used to live, oddly enough.
I always thought that town name was hysterical.
We had a blast. Oxnard is a funny name. It's up there with like Pismo Beach and Paducah.
Ballinger Canyon's another good one.
Indeed. So I'm no longer hiding the fact that I voted for Trump on stage, and I'm having a blast with it. And you can see the people get a little. You can see their buttholes pucker when I say it. Mm-hmm. You know. However, I'm having a blast, they're having fun, and here's a wonderful thing. This gives me hope for the future! Like, nobody walked out, everybody had a blast, everybody had a good time, and I'm handing out, I got little, like, postcards made up. You know, they mm-hmm. got, hey, you know, the YouTube, the website. This lady, probably in her late 40s, she and her girlfriend came up to me, and she looked at me and she goes, "You were so funny." And I'm like, "Oh, thank you very much." And she goes, "We hate Trump." And I'm like, "That's cool. You know, that's absolutely fine." She goes, "We're nurses, and we have a list. During the day when we're bored, we come up with things that we would do to him if we had him in our hospital." And they had – so it was phenomenal. They're like, first we'd give him syrup of Ipecac. Then we would – you know, they had like a whole list of like torture, but it was awesome. That's how it's supposed to work. That's exactly how it's supposed to work. Are you opening up pots and pans over there? I'm hearing like skillets opening
no,
and closing.
No, I backwards did up. I you thought back. I went on mute to take a drink of water, and I didn't.
Oh, do you have one of those big obnoxious stainless steel water bottles?
I do, and it has a stainless steel straw.
That's fantastic. Good for you. No, no.
It's my contribution.
Particles.
My contribution to preventing global warming.
We're doing great. And it's funny enough, I was saying this last night on stage. I didn't really have a joke for it. But it's like I was listing all of Trump's accomplishments and how great it's going. You know, we got out of that Paris Climate Accord, And we're still doing great. Like, the United States, we're not the problem. Europe isn't the problem.
No.
China and India are the problem. Mm-hmm. So, okay.
We were going to give them a pass.
Go ahead.
We were going to give them a pass in that whole deal. They weren't going to have to step it up. The U.S. and Europe were going to have to do more.
Yeah. It was a joke.
Ridiculous.
It was an absolute. It was a very, very, very expensive joke, and I'm glad Trump got us out of it. And I'm glad he renegotiated NAFTA and all that good stuff, and I'm glad that he got Pastor Brunson out of jail over wherever. But we gotta play catch up, and we're gonna move like wild people in the realm of insanity over the weekend. Kanye went to the White House. I thought it was awesome. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and to see all the crap that that guy's getting, it's beyond the beyond. I'm a white dude. I think you've seen my picture. So
very white.
It's weird to comment like on the black community, but I've never felt like embarrassed and sad and enraged all at the same time that Don Lemon spectacle on CNN.
Yeah.
Where there's some black pundit who's like, this is Kanye's What Happens When Negroes Don't Read. And somebody else, just they're calling this guy names. They're calling him crazy. And what really got me, what like hurt my heart and hurt my soul was when Don Lemon started to laugh.
Oh, no. What sent me over the edge was when he started talking about how Kanye's mother would be rolling over in her grave. You don't talk about somebody's dead mother. You don't do that.
Yeah. And it's weird. It's like, that was offensive, but like, I don't know what it was. It was disgusting when, they say some horrible thing about Kanye, and then Don Lemon starts to laugh about it. Mm-hmm. And they're literally calling him crazy. And, it was just very, very disheartening. I had a little bit of respect for Don Lemon. Like, I respect everybody. Like, he's reached a certain station, right? He's on CNN. Mm-hmm. He's an on-air personality. You don't get there by accident. Something happened, so I had a little bit of respect for the guy. Gone. All gone. I've lost all respect. Anybody who will do that, that's not a good human being. It's not. Listen, we're not hanging out on the corner. On the Don Lemon hanging out talking about your mama on the corner jokes. No, you're supposed to be at least pretending to run a news show.
Did you see the Saturday Night Live skit?
No, I did not.
Horrific. Horrific. Making fun of mental illness, essentially. I saw it by accident this morning because I was actually looking at another video and it played next. And it was like a train wreck. I couldn't stop watching. And I was so offended at the end of it. I'm like, I can't believe they aired this. Like, bullying him for his hat wasn't bad enough. You just literally mocked the living bejesus out of this man.
Yeah, and how, listen, he's got, I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this. He didn't become... isn't he a billionaire? Isn't Kanye a billionaire?
He's a successful business owner, a successful music artist. I mean, and here's the other thing. You know what his wife did? She went and met with the president. She got a woman out of jail. I don't know if that was a good decision or a bad decision, but she let her guard down. She let her barriers down. She went and got a woman out of jail. Kanye goes and sits with him and is talking to him about, you know, downtrodden communities in the inner cities and prison reform. So you know who's going to be laughing at some point when Donald Trump overrules Jeff Sessions on prison reform? Kanye West.
Yeah.
And he's actually getting things done.
And I loved what he was saying about factories and mm-hmm. businesses and reopening them. And he's actually putting his money where his mouth is.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's just, it's disgusting to see what they're doing. Like, listen, do I think Kanye is the end all be all? No. I wasn't thrilled with his comments about George Bush and the hurricane. So I'm not like, lead me, Kanye, lead me, tell me how to think. But like, he's definitely broken away from the herd, and I didn't realize this. I'm looking over my notes. Boy, I tell you what, talking about voting as a community, like the Britt Hume was talking about this on the Sunday shows yesterday on Fox. Like the black community is like it's like insane. It's like 86% Democrat, like 86% Democrat. And I got some bad news for all our listeners of color. That whole war on poverty has not panned out.
No,
it is not. It has not panned out. It's not going well. So I go back to Trump's thing. Like, what do you have to lose? Black small businesses are way, way up. It's like a 400% increase. Mm-hmm. So anyway, it's horrible what they're doing to Kanye. I do want to make stuff in America. Whatever. I don't even want to get into China yet. I'm going so fast.
Making fun of Kanye wasn't the only dumb thing Don Lemon did this week.
Was there more?
Oh, there was.
Was there more?
He and Chris Cuomo, like, all of the cable news statistics came out, you know, in terms of viewership.
Yeah.
Chris Cuomo and Don Lemon are like in the toilet as far as ratings go. Tucker Carlson, Sean Hannity, Fox and Friends, those guys are all in the top. The only one from MSNBC that even breaks the top 20 is Rachel Maddow.
Okay. Yeah.
So then here's this guy with these tremendous ratings. So what do Don Lemon and Chris Cuomo, perhaps the dumbest man in news, decide to do? They decide to mock Tucker Carlson and imitate him in a split screen.
Well, that's like the classic like old school radio trick. Mm-hmm. What you do is, and it's so boring and tired. Yeah, if you're the struggling radio station in a market, you make fun of the radio station, hoping to start some kind of beef so you can draft off of them.
I hope Tucker ignores them.
Oh yeah, he's not going to say anything. Okay.
Oh.
This is the big breaking news right now. Pocahontas took a DNA test.
Oh my God, I have been laughing so hard this morning.
It's like, I don't know how you get science to do this. I don't know how. Like, first of all, I don't even know, was it her blood? Was it her swab? But they're saying that, oh, she's like one 500th or something. Like it's just enough. Whoever did the DNA test said, yep, legally you can claim that you are of Indian heritage.
American Indian. They tested right. her DNA against South American and Mexican Indians.
The AP just had to issue a correction on their earlier story. And just so you know, gentle listeners, the average white person in America has double the Native American DNA that Elizabeth Warren claims mm-hmm. she has. It's great.
But I mean, she does this video where she talks about her mother being discriminated against because of her Delaware and Cherokee heritage. Have you seen her mom?
Oh, it's
like
it's
she's
great.
White as Casper the Ghost.
Here's the actual this is from the AP, the Associated Press correction. The actual story from the AP, their correction. They say that the DNA test revealed that Elizabeth Warren is not 1/512th Native American. She's 1/1024th, whatever that is. It's like 0.000976 repeating life of pi. So listen, the average American has way more. And then the Native Americans say if you're going to claim Indian ancestry, you got to be at least 1/16th. So if I had the TV show on today, I would hand out Harvard teaching applications to everyone in the audience. Because, like, congratulations, we all have more DNA than her. But this is a great lead-in to the next story that I want to cover. Because it's like, the release comes out, and then everybody talks about that, and then the AP has to release a correction, and it goes right to the Trump rally the other night. This one drove me crazy. It just cracks me up. It cracks me up when you don't hit mute, and you sound like you're hitting it. You're like taking a chug off of a canteen. It's hilarious.
I did hit mute.
I could hear it all.
Oh my God!
It's like I'm in the middle. the middle leading to the next story, you just hear clunk, 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 like we're at some like old-timey mining camp, and you're like opening up your canteen.
I'm sorry.
Okay. It's okay. It's real, man, and that's what people want. I'm flying off coffee. I got so much to do today. It's crazy.
Can I just say one thing about Elizabeth Warren?
She's sexy. No, what?
Ew.
I know. I got nothing.
The fact that Trump trolled her into making a complete fool of herself is the funniest thing about this.
Yes, it's great. It is great. However, it was Judge Napolitano was on Fox this morning and saying that she's like, because it claimed, originally, the claim was 1/52nd Native American, that you can actually, that actually works. You can actually, fill, so, listen up, America. If we all have, and she's not 1/52nd, they're saying they just had to issue a correction, but, hey, I'm going to apply for a teaching job at Harvard now, and I'm going to say I'm Native American. Why not? If that's how thin the guidelines are. So they had to issue a correction, and I don't know if you saw the giant fallout from the Trump rally in Ohio.
Oh, the NBC thing?
That was the best. They just issued a correction on that yesterday.
Uh-huh.
Because Donald Trump is telling this great story about how Lincoln couldn't find generals, and Grant was this great general, had the highest scores in the history of West Point, and he was all this, that, and a bag of chips. But General Grant, this hard-drinking, blah, 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 so they cherry-picked the quote where Donald Trump said that Robert E. Lee was a great general, which he was.
Yes.
There's no way any kind of... But they tried to make it sound like Trump was and it got a lot of mileage. It's the epitome of fake news. The epitome. It is the gold standard of cherry-picking pieces of quotes, misrepresenting them. And then you had people like Soledad O'Brien. The racism runs deep in the GOP. And oh my gosh.
She's awful.
So I went after her a little bit on Twitter, and I looked at her bio, and... I guess Soledad O'Brien runs, she has a company called like Starfish Media, which I don't know if anybody told her this, but like Starfish, that's slang for butthole.
Oh.
That's like people will go, right? Like I doinked her right in the starfish, the chocolate starfish, but like anytime, she doesn't have good friends around her. She doesn't.
No.
She's not surrounded by. They're like, "Hey, Soledad, did you come up with a name for your media company?" I did. I'm going to be Starfish Media. And nobody said, "Hey, you might want to check the Urban Dictionary on that one."
Oh my God! See, I learned something new every show. I had no idea.
There's so much learning going on.
There's so much learning. But no, Soledad O'Brien's Twitter timeline is just like an exercise in have you lost your mind? Today, because of Trump's interview with Leslie Stahl, where he's just saying, leave it alone. The relationship is what it needs to be to get the job done. He was talking about his relationship with Kim Jong-un.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, it is what, and mind you, the job is denuclearization and improved human rights in the region. Seems like a big job. So if he says nice things about him to get that done, I'm kind of okay with it. As long as the sanctions stay in place, which they have.
Oh
my God, they went nuts over that one too. He's endorsing gulags and prison camps. No, he's not.
It's so simple to see through, and like what always happens on this show of ours, we're always a week ahead of the curve, at least. But if the media was smart, which they're not, they really aren't. The more I watch, the more they really are.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the way Donald Trump treats people that he wants to convince. Look at the way he does that. Now, if you're a writer. Do the same thing to him. Like if you had half a brain in your head, you would go, oh, Mr. President, may I please have an interview? I want to do, and you can get in, you can get on his good side, and then you can ask your crazy gotcha questions. But it's not like he talks to the press every day in every possible way, and all he wants, and it seems so easy as an outsider, is just like treat him with a little bit of respect, treat him with some authenticity, and mean it, and then you can have at it. But when all these people are just barking at him like rabid dogs, that's all you're going to get. Oh my God, it was so funny on stage last night. I was making fun of all the people who are excited that like, ooh, today's the day we're going to get him. Today's the day. Oh, and then we didn't get him. It went on for like 5 minutes on stage, and the place was just rolling. They were just rolling.
You know, okay. My favorite thing that I saw was...
What?
The early polling for the Democratic nomination.
No, what? Say that again. Say that again.
The early polling for the 2020 Dem nomination.
No, what? Tell me. What are the results? And then we'll get to Nick.
Biden leads the pack at 33%. The closest person to him is at 13%, and that's Bernie Sanders. And then the pollster on the shows today said that that's just name recognition. Really, the whole country doesn't know who Bernie Sanders is?
Yeah, that's...
Are you kidding me?
We'll see. It's early. I want to get through these midterms first. These midterms have me terrified. We'll talk a little bit about the midterms. I want to talk a little bit about an article that I wrote for the website over the weekend. I want to talk a little bit of history. I want to talk a little bit about me and Ben Shapiro. There's so much coming up on the other side of this, but I want to get to Nick Searcy. He's got a really great movie out. You really need to see it. I was completely unaware of this Dr. Gosnell and what he was up to and how the media didn't care and how everyone turned a blind eye. This is a good movie. We were lucky enough, we sat down and we talked to the director, and he also acts in the film. Ladies and gentlemen, here's me and Nick Searcy. As promised, you guys, we got Nick Searcy with us. Now, before I even get to talking with the man, go to this dude's Wikipedia, go to this dude's IMDb page. We're talking Days of Thunder, Prince of Tides, Castaway, which I just saw recently, which... amazing performance in that. The Ugly Truth, The Last Song, Moneyball, The Shape of Water, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing. This dude is Nick Searcy. He's an actor. He's a director. He's a filmmaker. He's a provocateur on Twitter. Nick, thanks for being here, man.
I'm also a really bad golfer. You forgot that.
All right. Hey. A really bad golfer, fantastic.
nice to be with you, Michael.
Okay, now I got so much stuff. I don't even know where to ask, so we're gonna go with the big one here.
Just relax. Don't be nervous. I know how excited you must be to speak to me, but you know, it's normal. People feel like this all the time. Don't just relax.
I'm gonna try. I wanna talk about you've directed two films. You directed a piece in 95, which I'm guessing you did that on film, right? That was like an old school film camera, right?
Yes, we shot that on 35 millimeter film back before the digital age. Yeah.
Okay, so that's stress. That's a high level stress. Now you've got a new film coming out, Gosnell. You're all finished up on that. You wrapped a couple years ago, but now you've locked in a distribution deal. What was your experience like on that one? That's a bit bigger, yeah?
Yeah, it was a little bigger budget for me, and you know, it was a great experience. Just I love directing. I love the thrill of trying to make a movie that way. It's kind of like being in a war. not to denigrate soldiers, but I mean it's a battle every day to get the thing done. And you know, I'm very excited that it's finally coming out. There was a while there when I thought that it just might never surface because it's a very controversial subject, and I think the producers had some difficulty getting a company to release it.
Well, in case you don't know, Gosnell, a big abortion doctor, right, in Philly?
Yeah. Well, basically, he was a murderer. He just, you know, the fact that he happened to be an abortion doctor was just the way he went about things. I mean, he was basically performing a lot of illegal abortions, and he was killing babies after they'd already been born. So that's what he was convicted of. He was convicted of murder.
Wow. And this is like one of the biggest, like, underreported crime sprees. Because I found out about this, like, maybe 2-3 years ago. I'd never even heard of the guy. So
yeah.
Here's what I, as a filmmaker, just, and I apologize, like, is it, I don't know how do you make this just, like, instead of just being, like, sad and maudlin, is it a thriller? Are we on the side of the cops and we're trying to track this guy down? Or is it, like, inside the mind of a, how did you tackle it?
No,
how did you go about it?
It's a thriller. It's definitely a crime drama. It's all about how they caught him and how they prosecuted him. That's basically what it is. Because I just thought that any other way of going about it would just be too maudlin and would make the movie unwatchable.
Yeah.
But, you know, I wanted the story to get out there, but I did also want it to be something that people could actually sit through without losing their lunch, you know.
Yeah, so that's a tough one. I mean, just as a subject matter. Now, did the producers, like, reach out to you? Or, like, it's tough, man. I don't know. Granted, you've done a boatload of films. I just named a handful, and you've been acting for a very long time. And most talented people eventually want to direct. But, like, what made you say yes to this project?
Well, when they first contacted me, you know, I was a friend of theirs, and they just said, "Do you know anybody who might be interested in directing this film?" And I gave them a couple of names, and those names didn't pan out. And they came back to me, and I said, "Well, you know, I did direct a film a few years ago. I might do it, depending on the script, you know." And I sent them a copy of the movie that I directed, and they asked me to come on board. And yeah,
that's,
I mean,
great.
After I read this, I was kind of tentative about it until I read the script. And when I read the script, I thought, okay, this is a story that needs to be told. And it's one of those rare instances where you can kind of participate in something that you actually think might be important, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and how are, I'm sure you, have you screened this for critics and what's the feedback been?
You know, it's been screened for a lot of different groups. The feedback has been very positive. They haven't screened it for critics. I know what the critics are going to say. I mean, you know, I'm not going to pay any attention to that, but it's been very well received by the audiences that have watched it. So.
That's fantastic. Now, was there like a breakout person for you? Now, I know you have to be somewhat political because you got a big cast. You got to be nice to everybody. But is there a performance in the film that just stands out where you're like, wow, I didn't know this guy or this girl just had it in them?
I would say both in the case of Dean Cain, who delivers a really gritty, down-to-earth performance that I haven't seen him do anything like this before, and he's really terrific in it. And Sarah Jane Morris, who's basically the lead in the film, she's the lead prosecutor, she really, it's a brave, touching, wonderful performance from her. And a lot of the, I mean, almost all the, I have like 6 notes from different actresses in the movie who basically wrote me saying, "Thank you for giving me my first role."
Wow.
There's a lot of first-time actresses in this movie, and they all are pretty amazing. And a lot of that, of course, is due to me because I'm such a genius. But,
well, I tell you, I know you're joking around, but like, that is a huge part of it. You know, you don't want an adversarial role with your cast. They got to feel comfortable. They got to feel, you kind of have to shepherd them on this journey, but you got to get what you want out of it. I'd love to direct as well someday, but it's like such a daunting task. Like, what was the biggest challenge?
Really, time, the budget, and the amount of time that we had to spend. That was the biggest challenge because, you know, we shot the movie in 21 days, and really it should have been 30.
Yeah,
but,
that's like a Clint Eastwood schedule right there.
Yeah, it really is. It's like a TV movie schedule. But, you know, back in the 80s when they made TV movies.
They should bring those back.
Yeah, they should. I guess they can't figure out how to make that profitable anymore. But, that was really the biggest challenge is, you know, you got to get so much done in a day. And but thankfully, I had a great crew. I had a great DP, Mark Peterson, who did a fantastic job. And, you know, it really came together beautifully. I mean, I'm very proud of it. It's a nice.
I cannot wait to see it. I cannot wait to see it. Now I want to get to you a little bit as an actor. Some of the directors that you've worked with, insane. Barbara Streisand, Tony Scott, Robert Zemeckis, holy smoke, Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah, well, of those that you mentioned, only Barbara Streisand is actually insane. But
what was she to work like? You guys, you were a Prince of Tides. You were on the
No, she's perfectly nice. I was just kidding. It was a long time ago, and I was only there for one day. But in the movie, I basically have one scene where I'm at a party, and I ask Nick Nolte to dance with me.
Yeah.
And Barbara Streisand, when I auditioned for the movie, I kind of came in like leather gear. Like a lot of the other people that were auditioning for it were kind of preppy and nicely dressed. And I had on a leather cap, a tank top, and a chain and stuff. And she kind of didn't get it when I did my audition. She said, she looked at me and she said, you know, I might want to use you for one of the rapists. And I think the story goes that she showed the tapes of the auditions to Nick Nolte. And Nick Nolte said, you should get the leather guy. So.
Nolte, now was he nuts on that movie?
I had a great time with him. You know, the people that were in the scene with me were Nick Nolte and George Carlin.
Oh so, my Lord!
Yeah, it was great. It was just
I did. I was a what you call an extra. Came very very close to a speaking part in this movie called Teachers with Nick Nolte.
Yeah,
and he must have been going through something back then.
Yeah.
Because, wow, he was pajama pants and robe, and he was out there. Old Nick was out there. You know who does a great Nick? Kevin James does the best Nick Nolte impression ever in the history of ever. Yeah, okay, so, holy smoke, I saw Castaway in the movie theater, and I really did not like it at all, I just watched it again a couple weeks ago, and like had an epiphany. I'm like, wow, I totally missed this movie. Like, I got it wrong. And I'm watching it, and then you show up in
right.
it. And, dude, I want to tell you what, and I tweeted about it. Like, that was a fantastic performance.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. I mean,
it's a very rare quality. I want to keep blowing smoke here just for a little bit longer. But it's like the everyman, to me, is the hardest thing for an actor to do. Like, and Robert Duvall would back me up on this. It's easy to play, oh, I'm paralyzed, I can only move my head. Oh, I'm blind, who's talking? You know, there's just like little tricks you can get away with. But dude, that was a fantastic performance in Castaway.
Well, you're very sweet. I appreciate that. It was great fun, and of course, an honor to work with Zemeckis and Hanks. And, you know, that came about, I think, partially. I had worked with Hanks a little bit on From the Earth to the Moon. He produced that, and I met him when I was working on that show.
Oh, I had it flipped. I thought you met Hanks on Castaway, and then you did, you were Deke Slayton, yeah?
Yeah, no, that came first. And From the Earth to the Moon was really, I was on that show for like 12 episodes, and I met everybody in Hollywood, I think. I met Hanks, and then I met Graham Yost. And then for 15 years after I did that, I was writing Graham Yost going, I thought you liked me. I thought we were friends. What? You're doing all this stuff, and you never cast me. And then finally he told me he gave me Justified just to shut me up.
Oh man, I haven't seen Justified. I gotta get into that. I'm a huge Timothy Oliphant fan. He was amazing. What was the series he did on HBO? Deadwood.
Yeah, he's all right.
He doesn't suck. He's got that. He's got that. He's got that. I can barely contain my rage thing down. I've never seen anybody do that. Just like he's just so angry, and it's just simmering. It's fantastic.
Yeah, we had a great time on that show. Most of my stuff that show, you'll see when you watch it. I mean, 90% of what I do on that show is talk to him.
So, okay.
But yeah, we had a great time.
Now, I just want to get this out there. You were also on. You were a series regular on Rodney with my old friend Rodney Carrington. I had no idea. Oh my God, I've been in Hollywood for a while. I've been fortunate enough. I've written on a few shows. Blah 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 blah. But like before any of that happened, I had met Rodney, and I'd never seen anything like it. We were working at a comedy club in Louisville, Kentucky, and he just, there was like 25 people on the first night. He was so funny. I like my women like I like my chicken, just a little bit of fat on the end. He's doing right. His little songs. He's just a goofball.
Right. Yeah.
He's just this oaky, goofball, lovable idiot, and just to watch the audience just grow and grow and grow until by Friday night, it was just standing room only. It was hilarious. So I moved out to LA. Oh, it's completely amazing. I moved out to Hollywood, and then I'm doing stand up at like the improv in like in Phoenix or something. And Rodney's doing like a theater. He comes out to see. He ends his show, comes over to see my show, and he's like, "Do you ever move out to LA? They keep trying to convince me to go." Now, if you don't know Rodney, that's spot on.
Yeah, it is. It is.
They keep trying to get me to come out there, and I'm like, I went to the head of ABC, and I'm like, what do you pay John Ritter? You want to pay me what you pay John Ritter, then I'll do the dang show. And he was completely for real, and it worked. Yeah. It was hilarious.
Yeah, we did two seasons, and, you know, when I met Rodney, I just auditioned for it and met him, and we did the pilot, and we just hit it off. We were really good friends right from the beginning, and I had never really heard of Rodney before. You know, I'd been in L.A. all this time, and I didn't know that he was such a big comedian out in the middle of the country. And after we got done, I was flying back to North Carolina, and he said, why don't you just come with me and you stop and stop. I think we went to, I can't remember exactly, St. Louis. We went to St. Louis on his private jet to see his show.
Yeah.
And, like, we go in, and there's 5,000 people there. And they know every word to every song. And I was like, oh, my God, who is this man?
Exactly. See, here's the deal, Nick. You were living in a bubble.
Yeah.
And Rodney was out there in the middle of America. He's the Donald Trump of stand-ups.
I know. And he's still killing it. I mean, I just talked to him last week. He works every weekend and goes back home. And he says, man, I'm done with that L.A. stuff. I'm not ever coming out there ever again.
He is a genius. And oddly enough, you're a fantastic golfer. Rodney taught me to golf.
Yeah.
I never golfed. And he's always complaining about his wife. The first day I met him, I tell you what, man, my wife just spends all my money. She just spends all my money. He didn't have a car. This is before he was huge. He didn't have a car. He's like, can you take me to the mall? Can you take me to the mall? It's white hat season. It's white hat. And I'm like, I take him to the mall, and the guy blows $300 on a white cowboy hat. I'm like, yeah, your wife's the problem. Your wife is the problem.
Yeah, yeah. No, Rodney's a character for sure.
Hilarious.
And the other thing I directed was a music video for Rodney. So,
are you kidding me?
No, I did a music video for his song, If I'm the Only One. And he plays it now at all his concerts. He plays it in the pre-show.
That's fantastic, man. Now, but before I let you go, like, and this is fantastic because, and it gives me hope as a, like, I'm on Twitter, I'm doing this Loftus Party thing and trying to maintain a career in Hollywood, and I see your tweets, and I'm like, okay, here's because, dude, I always hold back. Always hold back. I'm pumping the brakes 9 times out of 10 because I'm like, I don't, but like, you let it rip, dude.
Yeah, you're probably smart. You probably should keep No, I just, at a certain point, I think I just got to the point where it's like, okay, I'm not going to put up with this. I don't care. I'm going to be myself and let the chips fall where they may. And if somebody doesn't want to work with me because of my politics, then I probably wouldn't enjoy the experience anyway. So the hell with it, you know.
But has it gotten in the way ever? Have you, like, been on the set and someone says something and you bite your tongue? Has it ever been? Because, like, with me, like, I was writing on the old George Lopez show, the sitcom, and I had a producer. A buddy of mine said something about Bush, like in support of Bush, and this woman was like, I can't believe we've got Republicans on the staff. And me and my butt got really quiet really quick, you know?
Yeah, I know. Well, you know what? Everybody knows what my politics are, and I don't talk politics on the set. I mean, if somebody brings it up, I just go, you know, that's not something I'm willing to discuss here. I don't think it's the proper forum, unless you'd like to talk about Jesus, too. they sort of leave me alone after that. But yeah, it's just a policy. You know, what I do on Twitter and, you know, when I speak on the radio or whatever I do, that's one thing. But I don't like the people that talk politics at work. I think it's rude. I think it's rude because there's a power imbalance there. And there's definitely people on the crew that are not going to speak up if one of the stars starts going on and on about what a racist Trump is or how awful Republicans are, you know, because a lot of the crew's mixed. The crew isn't 100% Democrat, but they can't, you know, that it's not fair. If they open their mouths, they'll get fired.
Yeah. So, yeah, absolutely.
So I just don't do that.
Okay. Well, before I let you go, one more question was, did you ever turn down a part or lose out a part and just look back and go, man, I messed up. I wish I could have a do-over on that. Like, famously, like Tom Selleck was supposed to be Indiana Jones. James Caan turned down the lead in Kramer versus Kramer. Do you have one of those famous, like, the part that got away stories?
And no, I don't really. I think I must have accepted every part that somebody offered me.
You know, that's fantastic.
I just went, okay, how much? You know, I might have turned a few things down because I didn't think there was enough money or it was too far to travel or it conflicted with something, but I never did turn down a role just because I didn't like it, you know.
Well, hey, that's cool. I am digging it. So what's next? Are you going to go back to directing? Are you acting? What's next?
Well, I'm still acting once in a while, and I have a couple of projects that I'm developing. One's a wrestling script, and one is a script about gospel quartet music in the 60s, which, as you might imagine, is a really hot topic right now.
That's the one that's going to sell. That's the one that's going to sell, I'll tell you right now.
Right. But I do hope to direct some more. I've gotten to that age where most of the parts people offer me are kind of the boring. They're the same things that I've already done, and it's like, you know, the old guys don't get to do that much unless you're Robert Duvall.
Well, so, dude, you are killing it. You're crushing it. Don't change anything. A fine actor, a great director. Everybody, you need to go out and see Gosnell on October 12th.
Absolutely. So, that first weekend is key. Everybody go on opening day.
Yeah, you gotta make that algorithm happen. Let's beat the machine. Right. Nick, thank you so much for being on the show, dude. Have a good one. I'll let you get back to golf. I'd love to talk to you in the future, brother, if you're ever around.
Nice talking to you, Michael.
Good talking to you, buddy. Take care.
All right.
Let the record show, I like hanging out with Nick Searcy. That's a good dude right there. Mm-hmm. That is a high-quality dude. I want the movie to do well. It's wonderful. I like rebels.
100% okay, on Rotten Tomatoes so far.
Ooh, that's good news. But I like the idea of, okay, a big Hollywood studio isn't going to make this. We're going to get some money together. We're going to get a good director, some good actors, and have at it. And let's let the chips fall where they may. So I just enjoy that.
Amazing in it too. In the clips I've seen.
Okay.
Superman.
Okay. And then Zoe. I saw Zoe in it from 20 Pound Sledge. Mm-hmm. I was actually on YouTube. I am there are shenanigans going on. There are shenanigans going on with YouTube. They're demonetizing the weirdest stuff. So I'm digging into the analytics. I'm completely addicted to the YouTube channel and to our website and all these things. So I did a YouTube video about how Albert Einstein and these other guys wrote this letter to Franklin Roosevelt a long time ago to warn him about the possibility of nuclear fission and chain reactions and weapons. So anyway, YouTube demonetized it.
What?
So, oh yeah, they demonetized it. And,
that's
and
weird.
It's completely weird. So I put an ad on Facebook saying this is just bizarre. They also demonetized a video. It's me doing stand-up talking about I don't trust the British. I think they're still mad for losing us as a country. They demonetized that. So
they don't like your history?
I guess not.
Your history is hysterical.
I know. Like, and this is
like the History Channel paid you to do it.
Yeah. So I'm digging into the analytics. And most people in the last 28 days get turned on to the Loftus Party YouTube channel by my Andrew Jackson thing that we have on. So I'm like, oh, that's very interesting, right? And then the other way they find out, and this is hilarious to me, I did this video about how much I hated The Last Jedi. Like,
it's the longest video you've done.
I know. But it's like well over 100,000 views.
Right.
So someone on YouTube, some brainiac, Americans will always find a way. They'll always find a way. They put together a compilation of it's a best of people complaining about The Last Jedi. So I'm like, oh, nice. I'm in a compilation video. So I'm watching it and it's Ben Shapiro. And it's me.
Nice. And I'm like,
I cannot wait to tell him at Politicon. I'm like, dude, we got an on-screen appearance together where we're bitching about Star Wars. I was just tickled pink. So people are digging the history stuff. They're digging the Star Wars stuff. I'm still doing the two videos a week. Everything's just getting bigger and better. I'm not even kidding. It's getting bigger and better. So I'm looking into more history, and it's like crazy the history they don't teach. And like, why not? Did you know this? And I don't know if I'll do a video on it or not. But do you know that like two Puerto Rican nationals tried to assassinate Harry Truman in 1950?
No.
Me neither. Me neither. Maybe that's why you're not a state.
Maybe that's
why we don't come running when like stop trying to kill our presidents.
Because we need another broke state, because I'm sure they'll be so much more fiscally responsible if we bring them into the union.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, they'll be going crazy. That still kills me that like 3,000 people died in that hurricane. So I know.
And Trump was in Florida today. He was right on the ground in the worst parts of it. So don't talk to me about that either.
I love the pundits going, why wasn't Trump, like, seriously, of course he went to his rally. Of course he did.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, hey, you know, he opened up with remarks about Florida. But it's not like he runs FEMA. It's not like Donald Trump should have been down in Florida setting up tents and saying, organize and make some sandwiches and where are those electricians?
Here's a clue. Neither did Barack Obama.
Nobody does.
They go down a couple days later when you can actually fly in and fly out, and that's what they always do.
Yes. Yes. It is the way. Okay. Here's the other thing that I want to get to. It's like, I love it when I feel like it's all coming together. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we got a bunch of new subscribers on the YouTube channel. I look at the analytics. I love the way it's growing. I looked at the analytics from the website, and the website is growing. You guys, thanks for telling your friends about it. I found this poll, and it's something I always thought was true. And when I first was thinking about doing like the Loftus Party website, I'm like, I know people on the right who love to party, and I know people on the right who love to go out and have a good time. I would bet dollars to donuts that people on the right are having more sex than the people on the left. Listen, you guys, you definitely want to be a libertarian, a conservative, a Republican, what have you, because while the left is – this is the title of the article I wrote – while the left was getting mad, the right was getting freaky. If people we're having more sex than the people on the left, we're having more sex a week than the people on the left, and we are having freakier sex than people on. Yeah, that one jumped out at me as well. It's like 49.5% of Republicans have tried BD, like some light BDSM, more than once, which just laps the Dems. So we are the party. We got the money. We got the small businesses. We got the live and let live, and we're having more sex. I knew it. I knew it. Go to theloftistparty.com and read the article.
Well, that's because the left has become the new moral majority. Have you caught this?
No, I have not.
Oh my God, I knew they were the party of moms. We're having the vapors because Kanye dropped an F-bomb in the Oval Office. Really?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Everybody relax. Really, Jim Acosta, just relax. Do you remember when Barack Obama had a woman in there with green lipstick that eats Fruit Loops out of a bathtub?
Here's what gets me mad about this whole thing. Like, the other big thing that was happening over the weekend and last week is, and I even did a video about it. I think I did my video a week too early.
Mm-hmm.
My video was like the left has become, oh my gosh, I can't remember the name of the video. Yeah, the left has become the party of bullies. Mm-hmm. It's like straight up bully tactics. And then of course the video does okay, but then like next week, like Laura Ingraham is practically quoting it. It was just unbelievable.
You need to call her on that if you see her.
No, I want to call her up and go, hey, we're thinking the same way, and I think maybe your writers. Yes. Yes. Oh, so no. Everyone's these aren't mobs. They're protesters. And to see the pundits on the right just completely lack the balls and the wherewithal to state their case, it's like, no, wait. Peaceful protesters don't hit people upside the head with bike locks. Peaceful protesters set buildings on fire, smash windows. They don't redirect traffic in Portland and pull people out of their car.
Those videos are horrifying.
It's completely. And there was another, I guess Gavin McGinnis had a Proud Boy event.
And Antifa
recently.
Showed up, and Antifa maced the Proud Boys, and now they're crying because they got their butts whipped for it. You spray me with mace, I'm going to hit you. That's the way it goes.
I don't remember the Tea Party doing any of that.
No.
I don't remember the Tea Party climbing on top of statues. I don't remember the Tea Party getting in senators' faces on elevators and screaming at them or clawing and kicking at the Supreme Court doors.
They would show up at town halls and ask difficult questions, but the Tea Party didn't even really go after the left. They went after the squishes on the right.
And
they
were mad at the
Republicans.
I don't remember the Tea Party shooting people up at baseball practice.
No. Mm-mm.
You cannot compare the two.
Not even close. Apples
and oranges. And the whole time, being attacked by the IRS. Yeah, try that, Antifa. Oh,
well, they don't work.
They don't. No. They really don't.
If you pull these, and an interesting poll came out from a company called More in Common last week, and the only thing people covered on either side was the whole idea of political correctness, because 80% of people hate it. But more interesting than that, if you look at the people who responded, and they surveyed thousands and thousands and thousands of people over a period of a year, the 8% of America that describes themselves as progressive activists are white people between the ages of 24 and 35 and generally upper middle class or better.
How
funny was
that?
These are rich white kids that are going out there trying to speak for minority communities. Yeah, no, that's not how it works.
I was actually talking about this last night on stage, and that the results that 80% of Americans think that this PC culture is problematic. They don't like it. They don't like it. And then the poll goes on to list each like subset of Americans that don't like it. Like, so, and like
the 8% of progressives are the only people that do.
But it's too funny. Whoever had to write the results of the poll is like Native Americans. It was like 86% of Native Americans don't like PC. So you just offended all those people by calling them Native Americans. Like, wouldn't it be better to say like 85% Indians? And then they're like Asian Americans. You mean Orientals?
God.
I thought it was hilarious. I want to get this on record. I don't want to forget to say it. I'm going on tour. I'm starting a tour November 5th. It's going to be Steve McGrew. He's a really funny guy. I've known him for ages. It's also going to be Terrence Williams. Mm-hmm. You know him from his YouTube videos and his Twitter videos. And then the Deplorable Choir. It's going to be Houston, November 5th. You got to see that. And then the other thing that I want you guys to look up, you've got a little bit of homework. One of the things that I don't want to forget, the Good Censor. Google, maybe not Google, maybe you use DuckDuckGo to look up. It's on Breitbart. It's a Breitbart article, just how Google has been censoring. Mm-hmm. But they are. It's called The Good Censor, and it will terrify you. And so when I say it's very odd, that like the number of likes we have on Facebook, the number of friends we have on Facebook, the number of subscribers to the YouTube channel. Although it's all growing, I really you'd have a hard time convincing me that we're not being tamped down. I was recently the victim of yet another Twitter purge. I woke up, I went to bed Friday, woke up Saturday, and I had mysteriously unfollowed over 100 people.
Another Twitter purge. Oddly, I got twitchied a couple times, and I got BizPack reviewed, so I haven't been noting a purge lately.
It is, it's funny. But I have friends who are like, "Oh, I thought you followed me on Instagram," and I'm like, "Oh, I do," and they're like, "Well, you don't," and I look and I'm like, "I mysteriously unfollowed them," and I didn't know. And then Dave Rubin of the Rubin Report, who I desperately want to have on this show,
right?
And hopefully I'll run into him this weekend. He had a thing, and he was going after YouTube super hard because he had lost a boatload of subscribers. And so he you can look at his Twitter timeline, and he's like, "If you think you've subscribed to the Rubin Report on YouTube, can you do me a favor and just go make sure?" And right. All these people are like, somehow YouTube just unsubscribed people. So go on there, you guys, and make sure you're subscribed to the Loftus Party YouTube channel, and tell your friends, and to the people who have been leaving comments and stuff on the loftusparty.com. Make sure you're subscribed to that. You have to do that thing with the loftusparty.com where you go in and to make a comment. Yes, they need it's a bit of a hassle.
You have to create an account, but you have to do that on almost any website. And we don't charge you like some of the others.
Yeah, it takes 10 seconds. It's super easy.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you taking the time out to do it. Okay, so I thought it was hilarious that Ben Shapiro and I are in this best of Star Wars people bitching compilation.
Well, we've got exciting stuff. Good news for you.
Bring it. I am ready.
You are off the hook.
I am. I'm also off the chain. What do you mean I'm off the hook?
You are off the hook. White heterosexual men are no longer the problem. The big problem is us white women. We are problematic.
Oh my goodness, what have you done?
We are traitors to our gender because we didn't line up behind Filonia von Pantsuit. or the Empress of Chappaqua, whichever way you want to talk to her. They're trying to convince us to vote based on biology, which I will never do. It's disgusting. And somehow thinking that our husbands and male relatives suppress us and make us vote a certain way. So that was one of my twitchy things, because I responded to the awful Kirsten Powers, who I used to like and now can't stand, when she's saying, "It's not that we expect all women to think alike, but white women need to stop supporting the patriarchy." I said, "Alternative point of view. Married women share values and policy preferences and interests with their husbands. Kind of a recipe for a nice, long, good marriage. I came to the relationship with those values. Part of why we work."
It's like, funny. It's funny. And it goes to this. My video on October 9th, what I know about women. I'm tired of, like, whenever I have an idea for a video, I swear to God, I'm going to wait. I'm going to wait 2 weeks.
No, there was a couple headlines in the last couple days.
The expectation, there was, everyone was going after women. They were calling Susan Collins
suburban women
a gender traitor. Yeah.
Wait, women, come get your people. What are you talking about?
It is... they can't be that stupid. It's got to just be clickbait. And yeah, it's a very funny
profile
video.
Because I just thought it was funny.
What's your profile now?
I am a problematic white woman, according to the New York Times, unwitting supporter of the patriarchy with a trademark symbol, patriarchy, where I write that I co-host this podcast and I speak my mind, period.
It is. It's unbelievable. The whole patriarchy and white privilege and all that is just...
I'm gobbledygook of a social construct. It's just ridiculous.
It's right up there with the dog park rape culture and the fake paper people. Yeah. It's exactly that. It's
grievance
just like
studies,
it's a bunch
grievance
of
studies. Because I'm not successful, I need to know who to blame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so... That's fantastic. And if
so
you want to reference, if you want to, I boldly stated that I was off the hook on October 9th. I was 2 weeks ahead of the damn curve again, son of a bitch.
God, it sucks to be you.
So here's the exciting thing that happened. Well, one of the exciting things, the show was great last night. I'm going to go up there once a month. I got this whole new, the deplorable tour starting on the 5th. It's all wonderful and good. There's other good things that are happening in the world. But on a personal note, I had never seen the first John Wick movie. I had seen John Wick Part 2, and they were filming Part 3 in the studio next door to Kevin Could Wait in New York, but I didn't get to meet Kanunu or anything. I watched the first John Wick movie, and that was fantastic. That was fantastic. I loved it. I'm a huge fan now.
You know what else came out?
Tell me.
Daredevil Season 3.
Season 3 of Daredevil. So it's on Netflix now?
Yep. The best Marvel Netflix series, hands down.
Oh, beyond, there's no comparison. It's the best casting. The acting is top notch. The cinematography, the direction, the pacing. Season one, I didn't like season one as much because he didn't have the outfit. I'm like, give me my superhero. Season two, but it was still good. Season two was insanely great. And then, did you hear this?
What
about our boy Iron Fist?
Oh yeah, no, I haven't even delved into the
second season
of that.
They pulled the plug on Iron Fist.
Yeah, I gotta get to the end of the second season for Luke Cage too, because it got a little slow for me. But everybody says what happens at the end is awesome and sets up season three perfectly. So
okay, that's good. And then I'll leave you with this, you guys. There'll be more pop culture stuff as the season heats up. This is just in. Maybe I'll do a video on this. I don't know. They banned clapping at the University of Manchester. They legitimately. It's
jazz
the dumbest
hands.
Thing.
Jazz
the
hands.
The entire nation of England is turning into a Monty Python skit. It really is.
And John Cleese comments on that routinely.
They've banned clapping
Yep.
At sporting events. Like, okay, so guns are bad, but people are still getting stabbed to death. So let's get rid of guns. People are still getting run over. They've got 72 genders. If your dog does a Nazi salute, you go to jail.
Mm-hmm.
If you protest people being raped, you go to jail. There is... You don't want what England's got, what England is selling.
Nope.
Okay.
And the more you divide us into little groups and fail to deal with issues of immigrations and issues of terrorism, realistically, you'll also find that this country moves into a rightward direction very, very quickly. It happened in Europe. It'll happen here.
Some would say that's how we got Trump. I think it's one of the reasons we got Trump.
Oh, but guys, it'll get worse. We'll have a Marie Le Pen.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. Okay. Fun show. So glad that Nick Searcy was on. We will have Michael Knowles on in the future. Go see Gosnell. Give that a look. It's you probably, like me, you're probably unaware of this really, really sick dude. Go to iTunes. We're all about beating the algorithm, and so far we're doing it. Make sure you're subscribed to the YouTube channel. Seriously, double check. Make sure you are. Make sure you're leaving a review. Give us some stars. Type in some kind of comment. It all helps. Go to the Loftus Party. Leave a comment there. It's all wonderful and good. I will talk to you guys next week.